What's going on, everybody? Welcome again to another episode of Hockey in the Classroom, episode 25. Wally Wallacek out in Chicago, always with you. And let's go around and let's meet the team. First down in Dallas, Tony, what's going on? How are we doing down there after the winter blizzard?
Man, I'm doing well now. It went from what we couldn't record last Wednesday because I had just gotten internet back that day. My friend pipes bursted, so it was a wild time. At one point, it was in the negatives, and today it was 75 and sunny, so life's getting back to normal.
Well, that's good to hear. Yeah, in Chicago, we hit 42 degrees, so that meant people were outside in shorts and T-shirt. Yeah, we were sunbathing. And let's go cross over to the other side of the country here out in PA. Brian, what's going on, Brian?
Wally, Tony, good to have us all back together without a ridiculous winter storm impacting all of us. So nice change of pace this time.
Well, yeah, let's hope winter storms are done for this year. I'm done with it.
It's Chicago in February, Philadelphia in February. Yeah, there's still another 3 weeks of winter here.
Well, I want to say it's Texas in February, too, at this point.
Now it is.
Yeah, for real. I mean, Tony, you're from the UP, and it seems like Mother Nature was like, why don't we just give the UP to Tony for a couple weeks?
I said I was convinced I didn't lose power because it was karma, good karma coming to me for dealing with this bullshit for the first 27 years of my life.
You were probably like one of three people in Dallas too that knew what to do, or probably were like, oh, look at this shit.
Well, it was wild. Half of my building lost power. The other half didn't. Wow. I don't quite understand it. I think I might be on the same grid as a hospital, so that might be it.
Oh, mm-hmm.
That doesn't hurt in this scenario.
No.
No, it doesn't. There was, I saw a bunch of crazy videos of, like, the roads, people's cars, like, being, like, frozen as block of, I mean, it was crazy.
Yeah, it was something else. A lot of busted pipes.
I'm sure, though, the snow has melted a lot faster than it is in Chicago at 75 degrees, though.
Yeah, we haven't had snow for a few days now.
Yeah, lucky bastard. Well, speaking of snow and that fun surface of ice that of the sport that we like to talk about that they play on, we obviously, like Tony mentioned, we missed a week of college hockey here, so we got a lot of info, a lot of shit to cover today over the last two weekends. But first, how we like to start it out here, any big news items that we want to cover before we really dive into this, guys?
Yeah, I think the big thing is within the NCAA tournament, they've kind of started to get an idea of, what the selection is going to look like. And they're still going to use some of the pairwise, but also the eye test and things like that are going to be considered. So it's going to be a wild year, and I think it's going to be pretty unpredictable for the NCAA tournament. But also, what did I say? 13 wins or 13 games played is what teams need, and then Manchester is being replaced by Albany as a regional site.
That 13 games really helps one team that I've been kind of talking off, so to speak, the last couple of weeks. I kind of been worried they weren't going to be in the postseason. That's BU. They're at 11 games right now with this weekend coming up. So that 13 game grace period, whatever you want to call it, I think that really saves them. I think originally we were saying 16, but again, I think last week we kept saying, or 2 weeks ago we were saying, don't quote us on that. That might have been a rumor that we were reading up earlier in the year. I want to say probably right before the season started. 13 games, I think, brings a few more teams in play who've gotten their season off to a late start or have had to battle that COVID break in the middle of this second part of the season. But yeah, Tony, I remember you texted Brian and I in our group chat about the pairwise being sort of part of it. I mean, the moment you said pairwise, I went right on my CHN app. Did they unlock the pairwise button? And they did. And the first thing that jumps out to me, and I mean, we'll cover this in a little bit, but there was three teams that jump out to me right out the gate in this, if we're looking just at the pairwise, and it's three good teams that could potentially be knocked out of here. But then again, you said the eye test, and I mean we're talking about Minnesota, Duluth, Michigan, and UConn, who've all had three great seasons so far up to this point, who are on the out looking in. And I mean, I don't know about you guys, but this is kind of like my favorite time of the year to kind of talk about. We're talking about bubbles here now. We're talking about the teams on the outside looking in and the teams that are that might be on the end that could be kind of forced out. This is my favorite time of the season here because this is when it just gets intriguing. All the different scenarios that we can talk about in the conference. Conference playoffs are starting in a couple weeks for some of them. I mean, this is when it gets real intense and a lot of fun.
It's way more exciting with the with college hockey with only 16 spots to sneak in versus the NCAA basketball tournament where almost everybody makes it, seems like. And they're going to try to go to – they're doing – I know 68 teams is nice and all, but I feel like there's less drama. You kind of know who's going to get in or who's not going to get in. I feel like that's just covered so much. And when team makes it in, it's like, okay, we kind of expected that. Yeah, but here it's basically winning in. Win, get in.
Or you get that team that was 15 and 14 that's like, we should have been in. It's like, well, you're 500. I don't think you deserve to be in. Yeah.
That's what the NIT is for.
Well, and like to your point too, Brian, when you're 1 through 16, all 16 teams have a chance at winning this natty, right? I mean, we're picking the 16 best teams in the nation right now out of, what, 60-plus to win a national championship. And, I mean, for, you know, every year we talk about this. Last year, Tony and I on the podcast, before the playoffs got up, you know, disbanded up, you know, and taken away from us from COVID, we were already talking about, you know, potential teams that could have made the playoffs, but were on the bubble. You know, they were on the outside looking in that might have not made it.
Yeah, and I mean that's
national championship, and they're not in it.
Yeah, this year's going to be so interesting too. With, you know, we could tell, you know, okay, you need to win what, 2 games, and you need this team to do that, and you'll be in the top 16 as long as no upsets happen in the tournament. Who the hell knows now?
Well, yeah, I mean, and the playoff system for the conference is really – I don't want to say it's a huge change because it really isn't. I mean, you see a lot of single elimination playoffs within the conference because they're really trying to get this done within 1, maybe 2 weekends. So I guess that's really not the biggest shocker. But at the same time, you know, less games played this year, so every game mattered even more than it has in the past. And when you get into the playoffs here, you know, the seeding still matters. In the single elimination, I mean, you look at the conferences like a Big Ten, NCHC, and Hockey East, and maybe even kind of the WCHA. I mean, yeah, you have your top 2-3 teams in those conferences. But, you know, 5, 6, 7 can easily knock one of those teams out if it's single elimination. You get them on the right day, and this could really turn the whole, you know, pairwise upside down, so to speak, if that happens. If an 8 seed ends up winning their conference championship.
Right. I'm all for chaos. Let's let it happen.
Well, I'm always all for chaos because I'm always intrigued to see how this committee's really going to put this together. I mean, they already got it tough enough. And really, it's like, should they have really stated it in that matter of, oh, we're going to kind of use the pairwise in kind of our own judgment? Well, now you kind of just open that door a little bit for people to really start judging even more and go, oh, when your team doesn't make it, oh, well, their eye test clearly didn't see it. That's what I worry about when someone makes that kind of comment. But, you know, hey, I'm not on the committee and I didn't say it.
Well, no, you're not on the committee yet.
Yeah. And then, Brian, if that job's ever offered me, I don't know if I would take it. That's too much pressure.
No, he would just put UConn in as the number one overall seed
every year.
Until I get my jersey, they're on the bubble for me.
Not committed yet.
Yeah, not committed yet. But, I mean, hey, they're at 19 right now in the pairwise. And, you know, I think they're a sleeper for Hockey East Championship, just FYI.
Well, they are rolling on a 3-game losing streak.
They're getting the losing streak out of the way at the right time, is what you're telling me.
That's the way to look at it. I dig it.
We'll go. The good news is, not to jump too quick, they've got Maine these next 2 games, so they should be able to write their shit.
We'll see about that. you know, before we jump, Brian, I can't remember. Did you have anything that you wanted to cover here before we dive into here? News-wise.
Yeah, I think it was probably, I'm going to say the funniest story that we've seen, at least college hockey-wise, in the last month plus or so. I thought it was the coolest thing. Me being like the jersey freak that I am, not the one begging for a UConn jersey, but just in general. I like a good jersey, but in terms of a jersey, though. So we were going to cover this last week, but Alabama Huntsville played at Northern Michigan over the Valentine's Day weekend. So Huntsville made the trip up to the UP. Their jerseys didn't. So they had to borrow from a local beer league hockey team. Hey, so Matt. Huntsville played as the Fox Motors Hockey Club for two games at the Barry Event Center there.
Were they Fox Motors or were they Upers?
We don't talk about the Upers on this podcast.
Uper shirts.
Except the one that's a co-host. Yeah. That's the one we talk about.
Yeah, exactly. We don't talk about the Pond Hockey Uper team on this podcast. That's a big negative there. That might be one of the funniest stories I think I've ever heard, and I didn't see it until Brian, you brought it up just minutes before we recorded here. Whatever bar restaurant was plastered all over that jersey had to have made some major bank that weekend, and I would love to find out like what their financials were that Friday night or Saturday, because you know them just running around in just pond hockey or beer league jerseys with the most ridiculous, probably obscene name too, maybe offensive name.
Maybe a little bit.
Probably the most ridiculous color combinations too.
Well, it's funny because the jerseys they wore, they had looked like a little bit of blue and black in them, and the Chargers have that like really sharp blue, black, white, silver combo. So it worked. Almost.
I wonder if
so it was Fox Motors.
maybe they put a feeler out. Need jerseys, but need blue and black in jersey.
It needs this Pantone color blue. No exceptions.
Can't be neon green and a guy holding a six pack as the logo.
And if it was any consolation to Huntsville having to play in someone else's smelly jerseys for a couple of games, they did win their first road game of the season in these jerseys.
So retire the jerseys now.
They got to yep, back to your standard Charger blue and black there.
You know,
those got to get hung to the
you
rafters.
You know, all those beer league guys got their jerseys back, and they played probably last weekend, and they were like, all right, let's just rip this up. Let's, you know, Division I hockey players, potential pro players across the world, just wore my jersey. Let's go.
Go out on top with those.
So
it's just entertaining to see. You know, it looks. I mean, they look like, you know, they look like hockey jerseys to me, but it's like you definitely know they're not the nice stitched.
Yeah, yeah, they were the ones that anything, it was just the ones that Grandma took the iron and pressed the logo onto it.
The good old fashioned way of doing things. None of this printing yeah. or stitching. No. Get the iron out. And just plaster that number. Make sure it's somewhat straight on there.
I would just use duct tape.
Nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely not.
Oh, all right. But that's awesome to hear. I mean, let's keep going here. And, you know, a little different as we dive into this. And then, Tony, I'm going to shoot it over to you. And we're going to talk women's hockey out the gate.
Yeah, first off, congratulations to Badger women's hockey coach Mark Johnson, who was named the WCHA Player of the 70s. So with the last season of WCHA coming up, they've been honoring past decade players, and Mark Johnson was named WCHA Player of the 70s. And what, two days ago marked a big day in United States hockey, as it was the anniversary of the Miracle on Ice. That happened in 1980. We all know about that one, but it's also the anniversary of the U.S. beating Canada in the last Olympics as well. So a monumental day in the history of United States hockey. So
nice.
We had to shout that one out. You know, not really a whole lot that went on last weekend, you know, kind of a lot of things that were very predictable. One of the unpredictable things though, was BU and BC got a sweep. BC is a top 10 team. BU struggling a little bit this season. BC is expected to make a pretty nice run into the NCAA tournament, but BU got the win on Friday night. BC did get their revenge on Saturday. The other big one was Colgate was upset by St. Lawrence on Friday night as well. They would get their revenge on Saturday. So a couple unexpected games there. But I want to go back to 2 weeks ago. I wish we could have had a little bit more time, you know, to talk about this when it was, you know, fresh in everyone's mind. Two teams that look really good right now, Wisconsin and Northeastern. They're number one and number two in the country. They both had dominating performances 2 weeks ago when they played. But another team that I think is really, you know, we've talked about them a lot is Ohio State. I think Ohio State's one of those teams that, you know, it's not going to shock me if we see them in the Frozen Four in Erie this year. They went out and they took care of business on Minnesota 2 weeks ago. So huge series for them.
Yeah. I mean, Tony, I know we've talked about like Wisconsin's dominating and we see like the typical Minnesota Duluth. And, you know, you've mentioned a couple times and we've talked about it even last year, Ohio State's really had Wisconsin's number. And then there's, you mix in a couple other teams outside of that conference. I mean, me personally, I know we're extremely high in Wisconsin every year. And if you're not, then you just don't understand or have watched women's college hockey in the last 15 years, who basically have just been an unbelievable dynasty that they just keep pumping out just stars left and right. And I know, I think maybe a month ago, we probably talked about, oh, you know, Wisconsin, we projected probably that they might win the national championship. But, you know, I think the more we talk about it and the later we get in the season, you know, I keep saying, yeah, Wisconsin's the favorite here, but, you know, there's a lot of good teams that could potentially knock Wisconsin off. I mean, we talked about it just a second ago on the men's side. All you need is that one good weekend. And you can knock Wisconsin off. I mean, it's going to take a lot to do, and it's going to be, you know, you got to dominate Wisconsin from start to finish. You can't give, you know, even like a 2 minute, you know, break in there, pause in there, where you kind of take your foot off the gas. Wisconsin will jump all over that. But I'm not, you know, I think what I'm trying to get at is, I don't know if I'm throwing all my chips all in the middle here on Wisconsin right now to win the Natty.
And I'm not either, because I think this is the best year in women's college hockey as far as parity. When there's a lot of good teams, you know, in the past you could look at the CHA and say, okay, that's essentially like the Atlantic, where in all likelihood whoever comes out of that is going to be the 8 seed and is going to get throttled in the first round. Well, this year the top team in the CHA is Penn State, who's having a really good year. Granted, the caliber of play in the CHA is not near the level of the ECAC or Hockey East or the WCHA. So, I mean, you take it with a grain of salt, but they're still a good team. Robert Morris is having a pretty solid year. And in all likelihood, we're going to see a really strong 1-8 this year. And in a single elimination tournament, man, anything can happen.
I would love to see Penn State, you know, with the, you know, coming into the season or at the season right now, 15-1-2 is fairly impressive. I mean, maybe not fairly, really impressive. And they haven't lost in 2021 yet. I know, again, they're in the CHA there. You know, you're saying that well, Tony, there with, you know, the caliber, maybe not as much. But if they come in as the 8 seed going up against Wisconsin, one game, you never know.
One game, you never know. But at the same time, like I said, they're not playing anyone. Mm. At the end of the day, yeah, it's impressive, but
how impressive can it be? Right.
Yeah, when you're playing Mercyhurst and Lindenwood every other week in Syracuse, you're just not seeing the caliber of teams out there like you're seeing in the other three.
It's
conferences.
Definitely one of those scenarios where, yes, they're good in their conference, but when we're stacking them up, like, you know, against everybody across the country, and mainly Wisconsin, Minnesota Duluth, and so forth, the top teams, you know, we'll get a better understanding once they actually do play in the playoffs. You know, is Penn State a legit team here, or are they really just kind of a, you know, so to speak, conference only champion? You know, so I think it's going to be one of those where it's kind of a wait and see. I mean, again, like, at least for me, you never want to see just a complete blowout, especially in the playoffs. So, you know, I'm really pulling for Penn State, you know, at least keep, you know, to keep it close. But, you know, hopefully that, you know, they can show a lot of people that this 15-1-2 record is not a fluke.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And like I've said, I have a tough time trusting a team until you play.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's in all sports, I think.
Oh, 100%. 100%. And I think, you know, another thing I want to call out, we've been talking a lot about Daryl Watts for the Patty Cavs. Elena Mueller from Northeastern, another finalist from last season, she's going to be right up there with Daryl Watts. It's good. I think it's those two are probably going to be the favorites for the Patty Cavs.
It'll be definitely a tight race to see who ends up with it. I still think Daryl Watts is going to edge her out, but, you know, it's good to see that there's more competition for the Patty Cavs, the most prestigious award in women's hockey, so it'll be a fun race to the end to see who ends up on top and wins that award.
When you look at their total points, Mueller leads with 31 points. She is averaging 1.63 points per game. Daryl Watts has 27 points, and she's got almost 2 points a game on average. Wow. She's played 5 less games than Mueller has.
I was waiting for Tony to bring up the games play. If there's one person that's going to let me know games play, it's Tony.
All right, but hey, I mean, we've talked a little bit about Hockey East, you know, early on. Brian, what's going on in Hockey East?
Shocking. BU, BC, and UMass, and Wally's UConn Huskies. Top four there. Looking at it, though, again, you watch Boston College. Got a little, I feel like, I don't say some of their games are a little too close to call, but 12-2-1. With a couple of regulation and shootouts in there as well. I like what they're fun to watch too. It's a really fun team to watch. And again, with the way the tournaments are going to play out, it's going to be interesting to see. So yeah, Boston College still sitting number one in Hockey East, BU right behind them. And then I say UMass.
Yeah.
There as well. UConn, UMass, UConn, all the other U's except Lowell, who's seventh.
Matt, correct me if I'm wrong. Are they a conference that's going based on points, or they're going on points percentage?
Yeah,
aren't they?
I believe so.
Okay.
But yeah, Hockey East is one of those conferences this year where it's a little top heavy. I mean, Brian, what did you think? It's a little top heavy. I mean, we see. You mentioned really the top five teams. You can even maybe make the argument top six teams, but then you look at 7 through 11, and it's really non-existent. I mean, you brought up Brian. BC is so fun to watch to play. I agree. I mean, between BC and BU, probably some of the two top teams, like all-around teams right now, that could easily contend for a natty. And the fact that Tony brought up that all it needs is 13 games to qualify for the playoffs. I'm happy to hear that for BU's sake, because this team is talented. They only got 11 games, I think, Brian played this year so far. But this is a talented team. So don't let the game played, eight, nine games less played than everybody else fool you. That team is fun to watch. And one of my top players even from last year to watch was David Ferentz. I mean, he's one of the top defensemen in all of college hockey. And they just – I think they got something going. I mean, we aren't shocked, but I believe David Ferentz is BU's leading scorer right now as a defenseman. I think the last time we saw that for BU was when Charlie McAvoy was there. So
that's a solid
game. Yeah,
solid
so, game. I mean, they got something going there on the blue line. So I'm happy to see that BU is about to qualify, I think, after this weekend for the playoffs.
Right. BU has two games. They have a home-and-home with Merrimack Friday afternoon, Saturday
so
afternoon.
So two dubs.
Well, matinee hockey. Let's go. two theoretical dubs. Yeah. But yes. So they'll get to 13. Well, they'll get to 13 games there, and would likely be at maybe 11-2 with 13 games played.
So David Ferentz right now has 14 points in 6 games played. He's at 2.33 points.
I know. I mean, he's like, he's absolutely.
I think it's okay. That's okay. Hey, numbers.
I don't know if he was drafted or not. I'm Nashville. So, man, they got something coming for them on the blue line to pair up with Roman Josi, Ryan Ellis, and Matthias Ekholm over there. I think he's just as good as Charlie McAvoy. I think maybe Ferentz is a better offensive player than McAvoy. McAvoy, I think, is a little bit better defensively. But regardless, Nashville's getting a hell of a player whenever, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. I think this, you know, he'll be on his way after this year, and we'll see him playing on the Nashville lineup almost right out the gate, if I had to guess.
Yeah, it's probably
that's a safe
Brian, are there any big matchups this weekend in hockey that we need to look for?
I like seeing UMass play Boston College. That'll be fun. That'll be a cool game to watch Friday. I think it's a Friday evening game. My clock is correct there. I like seeing UMass BC. It's hard because every time, you know, some sites you go to, they default to like Central Time, or they'll default to this, and I got to do math. I don't want to do math. That's what I told you guys. I have a science degree. I have a science degree. I don't do math. So I like
science.
Point at a map.
So point at map, drive car. Life is good. So I like the UMass BC matchup Friday night. I think that'll be the one I will circle watching personally. That'll be BC's last game. UMass did have a warm up game against the D Friars of Providence on Tuesday night. They beat them 8-1. So will UMass keep that momentum going against the Eagles up on Chestnut Hill? I guess we'll find out. But that's the game I'm going to watch of the 8 other games I'll watch throughout then and there. That'll probably be the bigger screen on Friday night.
I'm excited.
Northeastern Providence could be a fun one on Sunday.
Well, that could really play into favor for UConn, depending on who wins and loses.
The UConn Fighting Wallaces. Yeah. Let's go.
I'm telling you guys, UConn is going to shock the world this year. 2021, UConn. Someone at UConn needs to be listening to this damn podcast and jump on board with me on this shit. I mean, come on.
They're one fan. One fan in the XL Center they let in there.
I'm going to blow up UConn Hockey's Twitter if they got one in about a minute here and get someone on flipping board with this shit.
As long as you get your Whalers, put your Whalers hat on. It can't hurt you.
For real. I got to get that out of the closet soon.
I got my Whalers sweatshirt on right now, so I don't know what y'all are talking about.
Oh, man.
Jesus.
Yeah, so that's what I had on the Hockey East side of things. Again, really looking forward to that UMass-BC. Again, just those top teams fighting each other. That is what I had from there. We had Tony kind of kick things off there. So Matt, you got any pick your poison there? What would you like to lead off your chunk
here? You know what? I'll dive into the ECAC, and not so much from like a standing.
I see you take the tough, difficult one to begin with. I like it.
You know, that's how I did it in school. but this isn't from like a standing standpoint. I mean, Quinnipiac. I'm sure Brian's gonna tell me I said that wrong.
I will give you a lecture after the podcast is over.
They're really jumped out. Clarkson is really falling behind right now. It's gone from a 4 pony race here to a 1 horse race. They're at 28 points right now based on, even point percentage or points. I believe they're going off point percentage as well. Like I think most of, if not all the conferences at this rate, they're right now dominating college hockey at the right time. And I think we saw them do this again last year. They started off slow, kind of quiet, and second half of the season, they really jumped out. But there's a couple of things that really jump out to me about Quinnipiac. First is they did something I don't think I've witnessed in a professional, college, amateur, or even a beer league hockey game in my life. And I believe they played let me make sure I have this stated correctly on their schedule here. But they played Long Island earlier in, I think it was Monday. And I saw a video where Quinnipiac, in the middle of the game, in the middle of a rush, pulled the goalie and did it, and then threw another goalie in there. They did a goalie swap in the middle of action. I don't think I've ever seen that before. it might be one of the most ballsy moves I think ever I've seen in hockey, to pull the goalie just so you could put the backup in before the team, the other, before Long Island can essentially get the puck back and try to just snipe a quick empty netter. So, I mean, the balls on that move right there, my hat's off to that, that it was pulled off. I don't know who decided to make that move there. If it was, Pecknell, the head coach over there, or someone, or one of the assistants, but
I would say that's like video game stuff, but yeah, you can't do that in a video game.
Yeah, I mean, so stick taps to one of the best moves in hockey to be pulled off this year, and successfully. but the other two things that really jump out to me is Quinnipiac in the pairwise right now shot up all the way up to 9 after this past weekend. They just, with the fact that they just keep winning, they're getting hot, at, like I said, at the right time. And with a quiet 14-5-4 overall record, we need to be talking about them more as we get into the playoffs. I mean, I have a hard time seeing them lose the ECAC at this point. This team's healthy. They're scoring like they were in the last few years that we've seen them play. And to top it off, you know, we were talking about Cole Caulfield as, you know, a Hobie Baker candidate that we believe that should win this. Will hold your horses here as Quinnipiac's own Odin Tufto, hopefully I'm saying that name correctly, is only 2 points behind him, having a fucking hell of a year for them, and is giving Cole Caulfield right now a run for his money for Hobie Baker. So we were just talking about Darryl Watts has got someone right, you know, chasing their coattails a little bit for the Patty Kaz. And now here we are talking Wisconsin's own Cole Caulfield. Well, guess what? He's got one person chasing his coattails right now for Hobie Baker. So that's really all I got for the ECAC. Clarkson, St. Lawrence, Colgate. I mean, they're basically right now fighting for second, third, and fourth out of this one. With only a couple weeks left, there's no way that Clarkson can even jump Quinnipiac at this rate.
I think if there's a team that could scare Quinnipiac in the tournament, I would
agree with that. I mean, it's just, like I said, unless something freak happens, like it's just the way they're playing right now, they're healthy. Clearly they got two good goaltenders because they had to put them both in the same damn game at the same time. they've jumped up significantly in the pairwise in the last couple weeks. This is why, like, yeah, if there's a team that's going to knock them out in the playoffs, it's going to be Clarkson. But I would be comfortable throwing the chips in the middle and saying Quinnipiac's going to walk out of here ECAC champion.
Yeah, I think that's fairly
yeah, bad. I mean, it's just if the Ivy Leagues were playing, maybe this would be a little bit of a different story. If we had more games played, this might be a different story. But, with the chips that they've been dealt, Quinnipiac has played the best hand so far. 14 games played right now, and they've taken full advantage of dominating the conference, dominating the 4-team series at this point.
Yeah, it's not really a conference. It's just a 4-team.
Yeah, exactly. They've basically been playing playoff hockey since the start. They've just been waiting for the other conferences to catch up. But yeah, that's all I really got. Again, yeah, this, the ECAC is easy. So, I'm going to shoot it right over back to Tony. And Tony, I know you got something interesting to tell us about the WCHA.
Yeah, WCHA, it's a fun conference. I love kind of covering this one, and there's so much going on. They did announce their tournament format. So the quarterfinals will be happening March 12th through the 14th. They will be a best of three series. They'll be at the higher seeds home barn, and then the semifinals and finals will be March 19th and the 20th at the highest remaining seed. In all likelihood, that'll take place in Mankato, Minnesota, as I can't see Minnesota State not advancing to the at least the semifinals, given that they'll have either Huntsville or Fair State in the first round. But they did get a little bit of a scare against Fair State in some non-conference action. Before we get into that, I think stick taps of the week go to Dryden McKay. He became the WCHA's career leader a couple weeks ago in shutouts. It was the 22nd of his career. He currently is second all-time behind Ryan Miller, who had 26. He's posted 8 shutouts this season, and he's also on pace to become the single-season save percentage leader in WCHA history. However, it might have taken a little bit of a hit after he allowed a few goals and was pulled in an overtime victory over Ferris State on Friday. However, they did redeem themselves and blow out Ferris on Saturday. But big matchup coming up this weekend against Bemidji State. It's always fun when Bemidji and Minnesota State face off.
Just going to say real quickly, you know, we've talked a lot about goaltenders over the last couple of weeks. And in the state of Minnesota, they got probably the top two, and that's McKay and that's LaFontaine. And that's my personal opinion. I think they're the two best goaltenders in the nation sitting in the same state. And I think maybe I don't want to say I threw shade at McKay a few weeks ago when I was really tooting LaFontaine's horn a little bit, that I think he's a little bit better. But you know, that's an incredible milestone hit for anything. Shutouts, percentage. And you can, you know, people can say, oh, well, he's got a really good team in front of him. Well, yeah, no shit. It's a team sport. So, you know, let him sit there and take the victory. You know, would it be extremely impressive if the team absolutely friggin' sucked and he did this? Yeah, of course. But that's not the point of this. You know, being a goalie is tough as is with a good team in front of you or a bad team in front of you. So, yeah, kudos to him on the milestones that he's about to hit. And, you know, if he's only what you said, he's at 22 shutouts.
Yeah. He needs five more shutouts
to
hold the record.
Let's see if what he can do between now and the national championship.
It could happen.
So a couple weeks ago, Bowling Green had a really rough weekend against Lake State, who they lost last night to Michigan Tech, but they had been one of the hottest teams in the conference, and they swept Bowling Green. And I was thinking, you know, Bowling Green's kind of starting, you know, to slide. But this weekend, they got 4-6 against Northern with a tie and then a big win on Saturday. So right now, they sit in second place. They're 2 points up on Northern. It's looking like this is a conference that's actually going to use points because every team should have the same amount of games played. When this is all said and done. So each team, I believe, should wind up with 14 games played. So, Matt, you can look at the actual points for this one.
I want to say, you know, like, this is a conference where I'm like, come playoffs, I'm really pulling for, like, Lake Superior, Northern, maybe Tech, Bowling Green. But, I mean, at the end of the day, If none of these teams in the conference have been able to essentially knock off Minnesota State at this point, do I think they're going to do it now? Not really. Now, here's an interesting thing, though. I want to get both your guys' opinion on this. We've seen a lot of conference games be deemed non-conference. Has Minnesota State lost any? I mean, like, clearly they haven't lost any of them.
No. So Minnesota State is 10-0 right now.
There's
no one in there somewhere. So you ready for the most wild part about this? their goal differential is 39. They've scored 44 goals and they've
allowed when you have 8 shutouts this year, that's makes that the math does add up. And I know Brian's not a math guy. I know Matt.
Let me draw you a picture, Brian,
that and I'll point to it. it means they have a good goaltender.
With a goalie named Dryden after Ken Dryden, a good goalie? Mind-boggling.
Yeah, you know, maybe a little coincidence there. Who knows? But, you know, there's a couple of things that, you know, I know we touched on probably a couple weeks ago, and that was and I don't remember if we really talked about too much, but then that was the news that Alaska was going to bump themselves down from Division I hockey, at least for one season, you know, obviously due to the funds and everything that's going on. I did see that they did release part of their upcoming season to start next year, or I should say this upcoming fall. But the other thing too is, you know, I was kind of going through the scores for the last few weeks, and I was really trying to look at, you know, what's going on with Alabama Huntsville this year. Overall 3-12-1. But when you look at their goals for, goals against, it's not as bad as I thought it could have been. I mean, really, 27-55, yeah, it's not great. I thought it was going to be a lot worse when you put up 3 wins in 16 games.
But then again, one of those wins was in the Fox Motors Company jersey. So you got to put an asterisk on it. Just like my pronunciation of that.
Man, Ferris
You know, like – but, I mean, we've talked about Ferris couple of weeks. There's a lot that needs to change with that whole team and the whole system. And that's when I think I asked a couple of weeks ago, is this the time where Ferris needs to make a decision on Coach Daniels and maybe, you know, they go a different direction here? I mean, he's done everything he's possibly could at this point to recruit in such a tough situation that he's been put in, you know, in the facility that he's been dealt and everything else. I mean, is it time to maybe Ferris State says, you know what, maybe we need to go a different direction. Maybe we got to get a different name, maybe a bigger name, maybe a former NHL coach, something in here that's going to draw more talent to Big Rapids, which I know we talk about all the time. That's almost physically impossible to do, but Ferris State needs to make a change somewhere. There's just no way that they're going to go into next season and think this is going to just change overnight. I just don't see it. I don't know what the recruits are looking like next year. I haven't gone that far into my research. I usually wait till after the national championship to start really looking at the incoming freshmen and which teams I like so far, you know, going into it. But there's not one freshman that's going to turn this program around next year, guaranteed. And this is a different scenario than Huntsville too. People are probably going like, well, what about Alabama? They're just sitting there with 3 wins overall, 2 in the conference. Well, let's talk about this. Alabama Huntsville, the fact that they got 3 wins after the shit they've been going through last summer is, in my opinion, a win for them. I mean, we didn't even think this team was going to be playing this year. They lost a bunch of players because they didn't think they would be playing college hockey this year. And so the cards they've been dealt to have 3 wins, one of them in beer league jerseys. I mean, Alabama Huntsville, I think, will have a better idea of who they are next year because there's comfortability that there's going to be a season next year. There's that security blanket of, or these recruits that are coming in, there's no fear that this program's going to die the moment they walk through the doors. And same with the juniors, seniors, and sophomores that are there. But Ferris State's different. Ferris State, they haven't had issues except within that team. They just can't get it done. And when you have a conference that's Minnesota State Bowling Green, I mean, Tony, you tell me, something's got to change, right? I mean, we can't just keep having a top heavy conference like that.
Yeah, I mean, you hope not, but at the same time, you never know. And while we're talking about top-heavy conferences, I think there's a conference that might be even more top-heavy than the WCHA, and that's over there in the Atlantic.
Brian, what do we got going on in the Atlantic as we get closer to the playoffs?
I was enjoying that perfectly timed goal horn in the background there. So. I figured we're talking Atlantic hockey, and we know Tony carries a flag for AIC, so it was completely appropriate timing.
I do.
The Fighting Tonys of AIC. But honestly, there is your top heavy right there with AIC coming in. They do have, I think they're coming to their last home stretch here of games. They got one. Are they splitting? Oh, it is a home and home at Sacred Heart this weekend, or Friday afternoon, Saturday afternoon. So they're pretty much, I don't see them not. I see them being that 16 team with the asterisk in the pairwise there as the automatic bid out of the out of Atlantic Hockey. Of course, I also carry the flag for Mercyhurst, but hometown team, you got to do what you got to do there. There were a few postponements throughout the week with Atlantic Hockey. Will it mean much overall standing wise? A point here or there, possibly. It is cool though. Getting back on the jersey theme here. Everyone else, you guys, I don't know. I need your guys' opinion on this. LIU jerseys, thumbs up, thumbs down.
I like them.
Those are, yeah, I think they're awesome. Tony?
Yeah, I understand.
Blue and yellow, yeah. You don't see, I feel like, I think college, you think college hockey, you think, you know, some of the darker jerseys, you know, maybe some gold mixed in with like Notre Dame, Boston College, things like that. LIU, the blue and yellow Sharks, I can get behind that.
I just like the Sharks.
Brian, let me ask you this. 2 weeks ago when we were looking at the standings, Robert Morris was in second, and I'm looking at Army being in second right now. What happened over the last 2 weeks with Robert Morris? Or did Army just have two good weekends that have surpassed Robert Morris over them?
Got a little bit of both there. You had Army actually has not lost in the month of February. So that definitely helps. A lot of close games. I think they had a split with Bentley. They beat Bentley in overtime Friday, and then they beat them Saturday night. Then they did another makeup game or just the close proximity there. So that kind of leapfrogged Army there. And you also got Air Force. I kind of like seeing it. I kind of think you don't think Atlantic Hockey. You think Atlantic. You definitely think, you know, the school in the Colorado Mountains. But it's one of those you got to like, I train my brain on to think, oh, yeah, Air Force, Atlantic. Somehow it works, but I really like where Army has come from. I don't want to drink any Army Kool-Aid too much with regards to that, but I just like the way they play. You know, I think that's more of a, you know, when you think Atlantic Hockey, you know, if, you know, I can't be too much of a Mercyhurst, you can't not root against the United States Military Academy or the Air Force at that matter.
But. So let me ask both of you a question, because so we know at the pairwise, again, as we keep stating, there's going to be partially an eye test. Well, we've known in the history of the pairwise that's whoever's in that 16th spot now, when all the playoffs are done, that team there will not be there in 2-3 weeks. Now, with the eye test, you know, do we think possibly that spot, that whole quote-unquote 16th spot, gets a little bigger, and we're talking maybe 14, 15, and 16 if we're going to be looking at this eye test shit?
I have a tough time seeing it.
So you're saying, just because I want to make sure that I'm interpreting what you're saying correctly, so you think it will still be just the 16th seed that will not?
Maybe they get two in simply because the ECAC only has four teams playing. But
only reason
I'm
throwing it
out,
Brian, what do you think? I'll get to my question, my point after.
Yeah, I am so torn on that. I want to think again. Like I said, Matt, you and I, we're Team Chaos here. I would love to see I'd love to see both AIC and even, you know, we're an Army sneak in there as the 16, and, you know, maybe put AIC, you know, in the, you know, 10, 11 somewhere in there. But with just how Paris is doing with that eye test. Not everyone's eyes are the same. I mean that in more ways than one there. I just don't know what to expect coming down.
Yeah,
to the
I mean, I'm only asking because you look at the pairwise now, and Army's right there, like kind of like how I mentioned with Quinnipiac, quietly at 15, like just snuck in there. I mean, we haven't been talking Army hockey almost all year.
Well, yeah, we're going to start now if they keep sneaking up there.
Yeah, I think we've really been only talking about AIC Robert Morris all year, and here comes Army. Robert Morris is now on the outside looking in, and Army is on that bubble of 15. That's why I'm throwing it out there. Is this eye test going to potentially hurt Army, or could it help Army? I mean, for all we know, Army's going to keep waiting. They might move up past Tech right now. St. Cloud and Canisius are right there with them, too. You know, that's why I'm just throwing it out there. Do we think this eye test could possibly hurt the team sitting 14, 15, and 16? Or do we still think it's the cliche, it's just the 16th team? You don't want to be sitting there at the end of the year. You want to be in the top 15.
Yeah, I mean, I think you want to be in the top 15. And I my guess is that if you have the opportunity to take, say you're down to that 16th spot. All right, you have AIC in there. Let's just say Army's in there. You have to choose between UConn, who right now is 8-9, probably going to finish the year 10-9. You got UConn, or you get Robert Morris.
Well, I mean, at the same time, too, you look at if Army's. I don't think Clarkson's going to be staying at 16th much longer. I'm going to say they're going to drop past Nebraska-Omaha at this rate. So if you take anybody from Nebraska-Omaha to Clarkson, move them up one spot and knock Clarkson down a little bit. I mean, if Army's sitting there at 16 and they look at and they're doing this eye test thing, I mean, that's the hardest thing for Army to go up against. Army's got a hell of a record, 11-5-1. But you got to compare them to Nebraska Omaha having a good year, Minnesota Duluth having a good year, even though not so much as of recently, Michigan having a pretty good year, UConn, like you said, they're probably going to finish 10-9-2 record wise, not great, but in Hockey East it might pay off dividends. And then Robert Morris, who's sitting right behind Army, at 14-7.
And it's going to be tough for Robert Morris now because their last two games of the season have been postponed. So
there could even be a, yeah. Well, so that's going to hurt them potentially.
Potentially, if those games are canceled, right? But if they sneak those in somewhere, that might be just enough for them. I mean, I know they're supposed to play Mercyhurst. I believe it's supposed to be a Thursday game with Mercyhurst. I believe looking at the So that was their one postponement. But you look at RMU's last couple games have been some losses. So it's like they're kind of, you know, a little bit on the downward. But, hey, if you could get one or two good wins, get in the postseason play, get your one win in your no longer best of three series. Again, there's an eye test. That pesky eye test is going to come in and either be the greatest thing in the world for a school like Army or RMU, or it could be the worst thing for the other ones, depending on where they
put them at. For me, the eye test, I think, is just going to – I just wish they wouldn't have phrased it that way, because I think it's just going to add more scrutiny to who's in and who's out, especially when you look at really 14 through 16. And then you look at the teams that are at 17 through 22 right now, who could easily be in with their records. So I think the committee they added fuel to a fire they really didn't need to, but you know, that's whoever decided to say it that way. That's clearly on them. You know, whatever.
I actually don't mind it. If I'm being honest with you, because I think I understand what they're saying in that this year's just, I almost feel you can't use the pairwise because so many teams have different amounts of games played. So you do have to take that at the eye test piece. And then at the same time, most of these schools aren't playing non-conference games. So when you're playing in the Atlantic or you're playing in the NCHC or the Big Ten or Hockey East, there's a big difference in the quality of the
Huge.
I guess we're going to have to see how this eye test really, I guess, kind of shapes up. And I think we'll have a better idea when we see what the final 16 look like when it comes to the pairwise plus an eye test, so to speak.
So Selection Sunday, you can't wait.
It's going to be a lot of fun for the fans. It's going to be nerve-wracking for the players.
Very it's not the best so. Reaction when you see, you know, the teams gathered around the big projection TV. Probably not. They won't. Maybe not do as much this year. But that was always a great reaction, seeing, you know, like the octobox of seven teams sitting around a TV and the one team that gets left out. It's the worst thing at that, but it's also the best. Selection Sunday for college hockey, at least for us, we're a little biased. We like that more than the one for basketball.
Yeah, easily. yeah. But I mean, we've talked almost. I think we're down to the last two that I think I've been looking into, right? Oh man, yep. So I'm just gonna flip a coin. Yeah. I'm gonna go with the Big Ten first here, boys. The Big Ten is intriguing, but I think we're kind of seeing it more set in stone here. And Minnesota's still leading the way, with two big wins and two wins they should have won too against Michigan State this past weekend. Wisconsin, Notre Dame, big battle this past weekend, and unfortunately for Wisconsin, Notre Dame took it all the way to a 3-round shootout on Saturday and ended up winning, but Wisconsin did get the victory on Friday, so that helped them. They're still in it, but it's going to take a lot more from Wisconsin. But what is going to be interesting is really, I think, the last weekend of the Big Ten, and that is because Wisconsin's got to play Michigan State. That has to be two wins. I mean, Michigan State is not playing good this year.
And they play Ohio State next weekend.
With Minnesota off until the final weekend at this rate, but they got to play Michigan. Now, granted, it's at home, but I mean, that's a tough Michigan team you got to play against. So Wisconsin is not out of it here. I mean, Wisconsin's not out of it here. They can potentially jump Minnesota, but they need Minnesota basically to split with Michigan, and Ohio State needs to win out to jump to that number one spot. And when you're looking at the, you know, one and two, again, this conference is just a two race, horse race right now. Michigan, Notre Dame been playing decent all year. Notre Dame last weekend in the game they lost to Wisconsin, I mean, they jumped out to a 2-0 lead early. But Wisconsin, who is getting offensive power from two great players, Cole Caulfield and I'm sure I'm going to butcher his name again, Linus Wiesbach. They're playing outstanding hockey right now. And they even got a third guy in Wisconsin, Dylan Holloway. I mean, these three guys all have over almost 30-plus points each. So when you got three guys that are just dominating college hockey, three guys that are contending for a Hobey Baker, you're doing something right. So, I mean, when you're looking at the Big Ten, really, it's coming down just Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Notre Dame. There's just no chance they can catch them in that race. At this point, we're looking at Michigan, Notre Dame, who's going to finish third. Penn State's got fifth. That's essentially locked up. I guess Ohio State's really right there behind them, only 1 point behind. I mean, Penn State lost a lot of guys last year to graduation, moving on to the pros and whatnot. So, I mean, this conference has really become cut and clear, and except for one and two, and it's really going to come down to the last weekend, so to speak, to find out who ends up first or second in this conference. But again, the Big Ten, when we get to the playoffs here, guys, it was single elimination, all being hosted by Notre Dame. You know, if Wisconsin is number one, they could get knocked out right out the gate. Same with Minnesota. And if you got to walk through Michigan and Notre Dame, you know, round two or whatever, that's a tough matchup, despite what the records might show, and how good Wisconsin and Minnesota have played. Because, I mean, we've seen at points this year both Minnesota and Wisconsin show us that they can have a bad weekend.
And here's something I'm looking at right now with Wisconsin's schedule. They are 10-3-1 since the start of 2021. In every win, they have allowed two goals or less. In every game that they didn't win,
when they are shit, it legit goes to shit. But when they're locked in, which is like the just complete 180 of last year. I mean, they might have been one of the worst defensive teams and one of the worst goaltending teams in the nation. And now you flip the script, and Wisconsin, who's been, again, riding the coattails of a freshman goalie, which I still think is, we talk about, you know, the two best goalies in the nation being in the state of Minnesota. But this kid is unbelievable. To be a freshman, to lead one of the most historic programs, kind of resurrect them a little bit, and is playing absolutely lights out in between the pipes right now for Wisconsin, and really giving Wisconsin a fighting chance for a possible natty, a natty fight here. You know, it's going to be interesting. Wisconsin's right now 11th in the pairwise, give or take with the eye test. Minnesota's at 5th. That could easily flip in a couple weekends, though. But Michigan, like I said, is on the outside looking in right now. They need a lot of help. A Big Ten championship will help this team out tremendously to get into the top 16. With potentially, like I said, Clarkson's not going to be there. Lake Superior at 17, I don't think they're going to continue to be there. I think in a couple weeks we'll see Michigan move up a little bit in the pairwise, not in the top 16. But again, I think a Big Ten championship win gets Michigan locked in here. And we could potentially see 3 Big Ten teams then in the top 16, which I don't know if we've seen possibly in quite some time. I know Notre Dame and Penn State had done pretty well over the last few years. Ohio State mix it in there. But we got 2 Big Ten teams that could easily contend for a national championship, which kind of gets me excited because it's 2 teams that are – we haven't seen this caliber of hockey in quite some time from the history of the program.
No, I'm with you.
100%. I think we said this. Yeah, as I said this before before I joined the team here. When traditional college hockey powers like your Minnesota's, your Michigan's, when those teams are good, that makes college hockey just that much better because you get maybe a little more casual fan. That maybe likes those schools for the bigger sports, the basketballs and the footballs, but realize that their hockey teams are historically great. And Michigan still has the most national championships, last I checked. So you get a team like that in the round of 16, you're going to get the casual fan to get up, get behind them as well. And again, with these one game in the tournament, anything can happen for the team.
Exactly. That's the theme of today, apparently. So, I mean, that's really what's going on in the Big Ten, boys. And I'm going to shift gears here, and we're going to, wrap it up with the NCHC. And I think we always end up doing that, too. So, that's just, that's not by choice, too. I think that always just happens to happen. But, Stick Taps, North Dakota, Penrose champions again. I think we kind of saw that one coming here, guys.
I think we said that in September. Yeah. I think we were talking about that, too. But.
You know, I think North Dakota finally getting healthier in the last couple of weeks has really been helping them. I mean, they're now dominant. It's not just barely winning. They're straight up dominating the competition. Granted, yes, they might have played just Colorado College the other day or so forth. Nebraska-Omaha. But, when you're 7-1 and Nebraska-Omaha has had a really good season, I think that speaks more volumes for North Dakota. So really when we were looking at it too here, St. Cloud, Minnesota, Duluth, and Nebraska, Omaha, it's a tight race for 2, 3, and 4. The one thing that worries me though, is I think a few weeks ago, I said Minnesota Duluth is looking like the national championship team that we saw for the last, 2 seasons, technically 3. And boy, oh boy.
No.
Where's that cartoon where the anvil just drops and explodes off the cliff? That's what it's looking like right now. Getting swept by Western Michigan, and then you would think that would piss them off enough where they would come against Colorado College on Friday night and try to get a W. No, Colorado College is like, nope. No, let's Western did it. Why don't we do it too? And beat them 2-1. So Duluth is on a 3-game skid right now against a Western team who's been up and down all year, but has played well actually against some of the good teams, and then a Colorado College team who's dead last in the NCHC. They are trending in the most incorrect direction you can think of right now. And if you're a Duluth fan, you are, I would get worried. With the pairwise and everything, they're on the outside looking in, and Duluth can win the NCHC, and again, it's going to be like Michigan, where they could possibly get them into the playoffs here. But that means you got to either beat North Dakota, St. Cloud, Omaha, and you just proved that you can't beat Western Michigan, who could possibly see you there in the championship in Grand Forks. So.
Well, and another team that could be scary for Duluth is if things hold right now.
Yeah.
They get Denver in the first round.
If you're Duluth, Michigan's got a better, not by much, but a slightly better, achievable road to get into the top 16 that I think Duluth does. So if you're a Duluth fan, this has got to be a little nerve-wracking, and it doesn't get any easier for them as they got to play St. Cloud next weekend. They're off this week, and then that wraps up their season. So they're ending their season against the number two team in the NCHC, who's had a hell of a year this year. Essentially, they need to sweep St. Cloud and then play well in the playoffs for a fighting chance. If you ask me, what do I think? I don't see Duluth getting in the playoffs. That's my prediction. I don't see it.
Ooh, hot take. The only reason I could see it happening is I think there's a lot of teams that are, not strong this year. I don't see – I think, in the past we've seen those top teams, and I think we have them this year. And then I think there was that next level.
I'll say this for Duluth's sake, too, that this helps him out. This is going to be the first year because of COVID and the shortened season that the first round of the playoffs is not going to be a best of three series. So single elimination, this could either really hurt them or it can really help them. Now I'll say this. Now look at this could be interesting here if you think about this. Nebraska, Omaha, Grant, they got to play North Dakota coming up next weekend. Finish that series out with them. And then I think they play them again in the first weekend of March, March 5th. Omaha, that's going to be an interesting, but if Omaha can end up winning one of those games and Duluth gets swept by St. Cloud, guess who Duluth's got to play in the first round of the playoffs?
They're thorn in the side of Western Michigan.
So that's going to be a trick. Now, granted, that could also be fuel to the fire. They just got swept by Western. They might come balls to the wall and obliterate Western. So I don't want to say that it's guaranteed Western would win, but Western absolutely dominated them 2 weeks ago. I mean, I watched both games. Dominated with a freshman goalie. And I think about seven freshmen in the lineup. It wasn't a contest. It really wasn't. And this isn't me being Western biased, which I know our listeners probably like, oh, he's just hyping Western up. No, watch the game, watch the highlights, and you tell me Western wasn't the best team in that two-game series, and then I'll shut up. Because I guarantee that won't be the case. Duluth just didn't want it. They just didn't simply want it when they went to Lawson. And they're lucky the Lawson Lunatics weren't there to give them shit for it either. there's that potential, that potential outcome too. And really, there's a lot of one game skids here to wrap up the season after next weekend. I mean, Western's wrapping up their season with a home and home with Miami. Western that's got the Western Miami series has been intriguing this year. Which we've seen years past going to the CCHA days too. They've given Western a tough time this year. If you're Western, you don't want Denver to sneak up past you at fifth and drop to sixth. So the weekend series here, which is a little odd for Western, it's I believe it's a Friday Sunday.
It's a Friday Sunday, yeah. Friday,
which I.
Early evening and Sunday.
Yeah, exactly. So a little interesting, but I guess home and home. Yeah, so it kind of maybe that's why.
It's a home and home, yeah.
But, that if you're Western, you got to win both games. And if you're Miami, this is really – you just don't want to be finished dead last in the NCHC and have to face North Dakota in the first round.
No.
And then Denver's wrapping up the season with Colorado College home and home as well. And Denver at this point, a little shocked that they're in sixth right now, just not having the seasons that we've seen them have in years past. If you're Denver and you want a chance at trying to at least get fifth and potentially playing Omaha Duluth, you got to win out against Colorado College. It's doable. I think it's doable for Denver. Colorado College has got a lot of pieces they got to still fill in from last year. I think they're still in a rebuilding phase. So I just don't see Colorado College really really doing much damage here against Denver. Now, I'll say this. You know, I've been a big Kawaguchi fan last two seasons. I thought he should have won Hobie Baker this year. A little bit of a down year this year, at least points-wise. Hobie Baker, though, for North Dakota, a contender would be Shane Pinto, who's at 28 points. Now, do I think he's going to win it? Do I think he's going to catch Caulfield and Tufto? No. What I'm getting at is, though, North Dakota has got a few guys, Hobie Baker, finalist, slash, in the top 25, top 30 of the scoring in the nation. They're healthy. They're getting healthier. I think the last month or so, they weren't as healthy. And that's when we saw a lot of closer games than what we're seeing now. Like I said, when you're winning 7-1 against a good Nebraska Omaha team and you won 4-1 the night before, I think that speaks more volumes to Nebraska, I mean, to North Dakota than Nebraska Omaha. So, I mean, that's where we're at with the NCHC. I mean, like, you know, we got the playoffs coming up in a couple weeks. I still think North Dakota is the favorite, but when it's a single elimination, and this is going to be wrapped up, I believe, in one weekend, you know, anything could happen at this rate.
What did you guys think about in
touch
on North Dakota and Omaha, the blowout game on Saturday with a minute to go in the game, and there was almost a line brawl, basically?
You know, we've seen that in years past. Especially when we were in college, and that's probably more Nebraska Omaha just unleashing a lot of frustration that they just got their asses handed to them. I've always been a big advocate for just okay, I get it. I mean, not so much line brawls.
For line brawls.
This definitely is. You guys know I've been an advocate for do not take fighting out of hockey and professional hockey and professional. At the professional level, at the NHL level, I think it has its purpose in hockey. And, you know, it just blows my mind. These kids can do this in the junior levels before they get to college, and then college puts the halt to it and says no, which doesn't make any sense to me. This has been a part of the game, the history of the game, since the beginning. I mean, some of the best players can't even hold a pen because – they fought their way through the league. So, I mean, I'm all for it. I mean, Nebraska Omaha was just standing up for themselves in a blowout game. Any other team would have done the same thing at any level. So, I mean, I'm all for it. If I recall too, Brian, I don't think there were any major cheap shots. So that's why I'm for it. If it was a cheap shot, I wouldn't be down for it. I'm not down for the stupid shit, the cheap shot, the retaliation for anything. I'm not down for that. But if you're sticking up for your team in a blowout, I get it. You know, you're frustrated. So I'm all for it. And I wish college hockey would allow it to, you know, at least have that more. I'm not saying like they promote it, but you know,
you can't really promote it. Right.
But like, don't put a kibosh to it the moment guys tie each other up, so to speak. I mean, I think that's Bush League, in my opinion.
And what do you think, looking at it from a North Dakota standpoint, if you're fighting back, which, snap for yourself, I get it, if you get a 10-minute, you know, if you get a game disqualification, a game misconduct, you have to sit up.
Yeah, exactly.
You already locked the Penrose Cup, so, like, you're not needed to play the next
week. Yeah.
In theory, I don't know if there, I don't know if there's any thought behind that. Yeah, I can totally retaliate and give a real good shot.
Yeah, I mean, you got to think these – No, but at the same time, too, it's like Yeah, I mean it's a tough situation because this has, you know, this happens in a blink of an eye. I mean it's so fast paced when someone all of a sudden is coming after you. Like, what are you doing? You know, it's not slowing down. Oh, am I gonna get suspended and play next week? No, it's not happening.
And you just throw a punch and see what happens.
It's basically a natural reaction. Basically, at this point, I think you're kind of hoping, all right, did the ref think that I really did anything here except, you know, try to tie him up and, you know, defend myself, or am I getting the misconduct and I have to sit out a game? And I'll say this, it's probably if someone does get a misconduct and they're sitting out next week, you know, better to do it now than next week and then go into the playoffs for first round. Because if you get someone, you know, knocked out for one game, or maybe a couple guys knocked out for one game, Colorado College or Miami, who's finishing dead last, one of the two is going to finish dead last, you know, that's a little blood in the water for the Shark to feed off of. Now, granted, North Dakota's got a lot of talent sitting probably up in the rafters watching on a daily basis, and a lot of talent still on the ice for a couple players to be out. So I think they'll be okay, but you give a little bit of a glimmer of hope for another team to potentially knock you out. That's my take on it.
I like the take. I dig it. It's just, you know, when I was watching it, I keep thinking, like, man, it's, again, I feel like we don't see that a ton. But I think you're right when you're talking about back at our WMU days, those last, you know, 2 minutes of those really hard-fought games, everyone's just going to each other. You know, yeah, you're not thinking of consequences. You're just going to stand up for what happened and
you're seeing it more this year, even in, like, the NHL, with the whole playing only in your conference. You're only playing the guys that you see on a weekend basis in college. So you're seeing them more often than you probably would have in years past, because you would be mixing in non-conference games. So the tensions build up a lot quicker and a lot faster and are way more intense. So, you know, there's a shorter time period between what you did, you know, January 1 and then when you play them in January 31st versus maybe a year ago where you had to wait till maybe like March to play them again. I think that plays into a factor too. You know, for all we know, like there could have been something that happened in the previous series, a month ago or so, whenever they played last, that could build up again. I really wish the refs and linesmen would not jump in right away and break shit up in college hockey. I will wish they would just let it fly, let them just figure this shit out with their fist in the stupid cages. It's like football. Just let them fight with the stupid helmets on, with the face mask. Let them break their own hands.
Keep the mouthpieces in.
You know, no need to suspend them because they're going to break their own damn hand and take themselves out anyways for a couple weeks and then be done with it. Like, you know, that's where I stand with it. And, you know, like, if let them fight and just let them fight with the cages on their helmets.
We've now found the whole Wally.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I mean, if you're not going to let them put visors on or anything, then let them fight and just be like, you got to keep the cages on. so that's where I stand on that. But so that's where we're at with the NCHA boys. And I think we've covered everything in college hockey. I mean, you guys got any final thoughts here to wrap it up here?
No, it's just good to have the crew back together after a weather delay last week. Yeah. So, kind of feel like everything's a little bit back.
A little bit more, you know, who knows what normal is nowadays. But, I'm glad to be back recording with you guys again. We got a lot of interesting games coming up. The scenarios keep thickening like grandma's gravy on Thanksgiving. And we're going to see as we get closer to conference playoffs here, you know, where the seeding is and when, you know, we got access to the pairwise again. So, you know, I'm going to be glued to the pairwise each Sunday to see what teams go up and down like the stock market. So this is going to be a fun next couple of weeks here, boys, as we get closer to the playoffs. This is the best time of college hockey right here, if I had to say.
It's fantastic.
But yeah, that's all I got for us this week, and always watch college hockey.